Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the director and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. The Roost Podcast is part of the Dave Campbell's Texas Football Republic of Football Podcast Network. Okay, been a while. We're back. Still, you know, got to do those vocal warm-ups, make sure the podcasting voice is in full form. Just, you know, a little maintenance, like when you, you take the car out, not the daily driver, but you take it out for a little bit just to make sure the batteries get a little charge on there, you know?
This is our equivalent of spring ball, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
just, you know, getting the kinks out. This is a trial run. Mike Bloomgren says, we're in the lab.
Excellent, excellent. The man's really playing to his audience of Rice graduates, so.
This is true. I never actually made the connection, but yeah, I could see how one aspect of our audience would take that differently. I don't think he has any beakers on the grass where he's at, but I can ask. We'll see. Yeah, it's been a crazy couple of weeks. We haven't talked to everybody, I think, since signing day, what with schedules and things going on and actually being out at practice and doing things. And the women went to an NCAA tournament game, and it's been... I always, every year we get to the beginning of March when it's like seven sports happening at once and like tennis is doing great as we record and all the stuff. And then I'm like, oh yeah, it's a lot. And then I'm like mid-March and I'm like, I am not going to make it until May. Like,
yeah,
how do we do this? It's wonderful, but it's a lot. But one thing at a time today.
Yeah.
Just some football.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll do what we do well. We won't try to, you don't want to run too many events all at once before you've really get your stretching in. So
yeah, I'm not a heptathlete, some septap, whatever the prefix for doing multiple sports well. That's baby steps. I will say one aside, quick shout out to our sponsor Homefield. I hadn't told you this yet, but I went ahead and did an order they had for the March Madness, and they were doing some mystery shirts and stuff. And so I ordered from Homefield a hoodie and a crew neck, just a random.
Excellent.
I have no idea what school it is. And I ended up with a Vandy crew neck. And I was like, okay, I can roll with this. This is fine.
Right. Yeah.
I was like, as long as I get like no schools like in the state of Texas, I'll go completely off the wall.
Right.
And I'm like, this is so comfortable and I love it. And I was talking about how comfortable it was. I handed it to my wife and she hasn't given it back. So I lost my crew neck.
Yeah.
I was like, I can go order you one from your alma mater. And she was like, nope, this is good.
when Homefield was nice enough to send us a couple of free things when we first started working with them, and I got the t-shirt that's in rice blue with the old English R on it, and it became my wife's. I've stolen it back to wear like twice, but otherwise honestly, even if it weren't such a spectacular shirt to make it worth just owning generally, part of my motivation for ordering the Lovey Owl shirt was, well, I thought I would have another Rice Homefield shirt, and then it suddenly belongs to someone else in my household, so replace it.
Yeah, so use the code Roost, go to Homefield Apparel and order something. They're all great. You can go random. The Love You Blue, I got an email actually today saying this looks like a shirt you would like, and it was the Love You Blue Owls, and it is, and I own it. And it's
that wonderful. Is in fact a shirt that I like.
Accurate. Homefield, you are too good at this. So yeah, 15% off your first order. They're super comfy. Help support the podcast. All good things. I think that was our only bit of house cleaning other than as we transition into football. If you're not subscribing yet on Patreon, you should. I am in the middle of, by the time you're listening to this, I think I'll have most of my updates up from Rice football spring practices. We had kind of weekly and is it bi-weekly for twice a week? Is it
bi-weekly
every other?
Technically.
Semi-weekly.
Yeah, bi-weekly every other week.
There we go. Semi-weekly updates on Rice football spring practices. And I just put together, in the last 3 days, I've written 7,000 words recapping the defense, the offense, big outstanding questions, and the spring game. So it was one of those things I did not intend, but I just kept having more things that I thought y'all needed to know. So that's all on the site. You can get everything that I've written about spring so far. If you want to go back, you can access the whole history. So if you want to see what I wrote about spring of 2022, like, it's in there too. See any hot takes about the Wiley Green quarterback battle. Maybe it's in there. It is. But yeah, so patreon.com/@the roost. It's all there. We are going to focus on just a little bit of our own little segment of spring ball tonight. And I guess tee us up. I was sitting with Mike Bloomgren at a press conference after the spring game. And he was talking about, if you're not a subscriber, about how Josh Piercy had kind of transitioned from, he was always this hybrid player, but mostly played as a defensive end, hand in the dirt kind of guy. He spent 80% of the spring as more of a traditional, like, outside linebacker, like playing off the ball, not with the hand on the ground. And he said something I thought was so interesting. He said, you know, going into spring, I didn't think that this was going to work, honestly. But Josh Piercy has made me a believer that this is a good idea. And we're kind of running with it. And that's the spin on today's episode. I have, by position, just kind of statements and ideas and questions from the spring. And we're going to determine whether or not we are true believers, Carter, in the latest happenings. Yeah, that took some like sort of spiritual ethos with it. I love it. But yeah, true believers of Rice football and its various faculties. Does that sound reasonable or fun?
Works for me.
The softball to begin with. Carter and Matthew, are you true believers that EJ Warner is the guy at quarterback? And left is kind of open-ended.
I think so. I guess there are sort of two interpretations of the question, in the sense of, like, is he going to be the starting quarterback, at least to start the season? In which case, I would say the answer is a pretty unequivocal yes, barring something really shocking happening in the fall. I think, to plug the coverage once again, I think you noted in your recap of the spring game that he pretty much took all the reps with what could be considered the starters, and Padgett got all the second team reps. So I think that one's pretty settled. In terms of, like, is he the guy, like, you know, can Rice succeed with him as quarterback? I think we have generally agreed that there is, well, I don't know, Rice was able to achieve things that it wanted to last season. Like, the ceiling could have been higher, but I think most of us are fairly pleased with the overall result of, like, making a bowl game for real in a harder conference. And they were able to win at a pretty good rate with JT Daniels at quarterback, playing as well as he did. And then they butted some wins out down the stretch once his career was over. There is definitely a, like, even if EJ is not this world beater, there is a middle ground of performance level between what they had with JT and what they had with AJ, who obviously stumbled a little bit down the stretch at times last year. There is a middle ground between there to where, if this defense looks as good as we hope it can be, that they can still have an extremely successful season. Like, he doesn't have to be JT Daniels, I think, is the point here, in order for this to go very well.
Yeah, and this is the thing that I've been trying to, like, I think you said it really well. I've been trying to figure out how to draw that spectrum, because we've talked about it, JT Daniels is somewhere between the best quarterback to ever play football for Rice ever and, you know, the top three. Like, three, four, like, you can quibble on accomplished or whatever you want to define best as. It's nebulous. It doesn't matter. It's an arbitrary statement. But he was incredible when he was on the field. He won games by himself. Like, Rice literally at times could not run the football, and the defense was not making stops, and JT would just go JT and win. And you're like, okay, that's great. And so I think I'm trying to fight the internal balance to compare EJ directly to JT and delineate, you know, where that fits in. And what I've kind of gotten to is this, is that, and bear with me on this, is like, I believe that Rice football is closer to quarterback proof than they've ever been under Mike Bloomgren, which makes me scared because I've seen the ballad of the backup quarterback with Rice, right?
Yeah.
So, but I think if you're grading on, will he be the guy? Yes, he's going to be the starting quarterback. That, write it in pen. That's happening. Two, can he be one of the better quarterbacks in the American Conference? Yeah, I think so. I think he was last year. He's back-to-back years of leading the conference in passing. So I think both of those things being true, then yeah, I think EJ is a guy that will help you win football games. Will he be a guy that when everything else breaks down, he wins them by himself? That's kind of the JT, how great are you question. I think we get there. I think we figure that out by like mid-October. But yeah. I don't know if that's the answer. So I believe that he's going to be there. He's good enough to win football games. And I'm cautiously optimistic that he can be a guy that takes Rice from competitive to great on offense. Like, I think he's in the conversation of, and you know, prior years under Bloomgren, I don't think we ever were there where we're like, hey, this guy at quarterback, we're like, he could be pretty good, but we never really believed.
Yeah, there were flashes of that at times, but never.
Yeah, like, I'm going to need to call anybody out, but you know, none of those guys were going to be a top three passer in the league. Like, we never thought that.
Yeah.
I think EJ can be that.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Which would be pretty good. All right, so we believe. EJ Warner, we believe. Running back. This isn't even a good statement question, but are you a believer?
Yeah, the belief here is we don't really have a set point for this one, but we'll get into it.
Yeah. Are you a believer? Dean Connors, the best Rice running back since ...
So I did do a little looking for this question, just, and obviously this is a simplistic number that doesn't take into account a whole lot of things, but just for a very simple comparison here, Dean Connors averaged 6.4 yards per carry last season. Do you know who the last Rice, if my quick running through of Sports Reference before we started recording, if I did not miss somebody, you know who the last Rice running back who averaged at least 6.4 yards per carry in a season was?
Golly, you said six. That's high, man. I have no idea. I'm going to be pleasantly surprised.
It was Quentin Smith in 2005. That was the last year Ken Hatfield was the coach.
Okay. I didn't have that on my bingo card.
I had to go back farther than I thought I would on that one. If we're picking a name for like Dean is the best Rice running back since, so I guess if I don't know, if we're trying to take this in a belief sort of way, like he's going to be good enough that we can say, oh yeah, he's been better than this list of guys going back to at least. And I think a good one to fix that on would probably be Charles Ross, who okay. is the second leading rusher in Rice history. There is a comical gap between him and Trevor Cobb, but yeah. Charles had a couple of really great seasons in 2012 and 2013 when the team was really on a roll. And if Dean is doing that kind of stuff, then this offense is in pretty good shape. And I think he has a chance to be kind of a, like when we saw it last year with him having games of both rushing and receiving where he just really like put up huge numbers. Like he has a chance to be put together the kind of season that Rice hasn't seen from a running back in a very long time, I would say.
Yeah. And I think the thing that is most interesting to me is he did that as I'm not going to say a part-time player last year, but I mean, he split reps.
How many times did we say, like, why, what, where, why is Dean Connors not getting more carries?
And like Juma, I'd have to go pull up stats from last year. I think he was had a solid, you know, average. I have to go pull that up. Like, he was fine. He was good. But Dean Connors was, you know, you might get 5 yards, you might get 65. Yeah. Juma only averaged 3.5 a carry last year. So half of Dean. Wow. That's stark. It's just crazy. So yeah, I think what's going to be interesting is, and I think that's part of this, I feel like Dean Connors is still kind of like flying under the radar in AAC circles and national circles, because I mean, he only had 121 carries last year, 771 yards, you know, didn't hit that proverbial, you know, 1,000-yard back threshold, and only had probably two, like, blow up, take over the world games. And if you're telling me that this guy is going to go from getting 8 to 10 touches a game to 15 to 18, like, I don't think they're going to give him 20 a game. Like, they have too many talented running backs in that room. So I don't think that's going to happen. But if you say, give me 4 or 5 extra touches for Dean Connors and see what he does, like, I don't think it's crazy that Dean Connors leads the American in rushing this year.
No, I think that's entirely a possibility. And especially if we see consistently from, like, the first 9 games of the season, he has 15 touches combined rushing and receiving against Houston, and that's the most by far. A couple other times with 14. Last 3 games of the season, 19 touches, 18 touches, 16 touches. Like, if we're consistently in the, like, around 20 touches a game, let's say, then I think he's going to have a season that's going to actually really make people outside of Bryce Bingham take notice.
Yeah, and just for the record, leading rusher in the American last year was Mekhi Hughes, who Rice faced with Tulane. He had a pretty good day against the Owls. So he, Blake Watson at Memphis and Ayo Adeje at North Texas were the only 1,000-yard backs in the American. So I think I'm going to be surprised if Dean doesn't get to 1,000 yards. Rice hasn't had a running back reach that threshold, and I'm doing my preseason prep now, but that's one I always go back to every year, that it's been a minute. So, yeah, I think Dean's going to break that number, and that puts him in the conversation to be one of the best backs in the American. So I think people aren't talking about Dean Connors yet. And side note, I kind of did some informal straw polls with some defensive players during the spring and offensive players. But the defensive guys, I said, who's the hardest guy on offense to tackle? And to a man, every single person said Dean Connors. No other names brought forth. I'm going to leave it there.
Unanimous.
I said, you know what? I'm not surprised. That's what Josh Piercy said. And I asked him, they had a, and I think I mentioned this in the notes a little bit, but they had a, like, a red zone tackling or tackle period where Josh hit Dean, like, on a, I'm trying to remember if it was like, just like a dump off to the flat or something like that, but those two head on, and Dean somehow, like, hits the spin button and just keeps running, and Josh is on the ground. And this is like 30 minutes after that, I'm asking Josh about this. And, you know, they were just laughing about it, but he was just kind of like, you know, like, a little bit frustrated, 'cause, like, he likes to win, as all of these players do. And he was just like, I just can't get him, man. So I believe in EJ Warner and Dean Connors. That makes me happy. Now, wide receivers. Deepest room under Blomgren so far. Are we believers?
You might have to lay out the case for me on this one.
Okay. Here's my case, because I am officially on the fence. Okay. I think if you just go look at the 8th best wide receiver on the team, so somebody who's not on the 2 deep, I think that guy, however you rank it, is significantly better than the 8th guy 5 years ago when Blomgren came in. So okay. I think by that qualitative measure, I think that, you know, the proverbial, you know, the worst guy in the room is better than he was. So the floor has been raised. I think if you look at the top five or six, I think Rice has five or six, at least, just kind of going through my mental list of guys that are bona fide American Conference quality level wide receivers. So the fact that, like, there's guys, they will throw guys on the field this year that maybe the Rice fan hasn't heard of and been like, okay. And I'm telling you, like Braylon Walker is a guy that I think of. He had had the biggest day at the spring game, 78 yards on two catches and a touchdown, and nearly broke another 50-yard reception. I'm thinking about that. Like, if Braylon Walker is your fringe guy that's going on the field and catching four or five passes a game, like, you're pretty good. Like, Braylon Walker, if you go back to what the end of the 2022 season, was the number two receiver at the end of the year. So, like, if you're taking your former number two-ish at a time to five or six, then you're looking pretty good. My question is, and what I'm not sure I believe yet, is if you don't have an alpha in that room, does it matter that you have a bunch of good players?
Yeah,
and that's what I don't know the answer to yet.
Yeah, it's just going to be a matter of like right now, you can't say like there seems very little chance that any of these guys is going to be even a very close approximation of Luke McCaffrey, which is fine. But you do need a guy, I feel like, that draws the defense's attention, that is like going to make opposing defensive coordinators say, we have to game plan around this guy. We have to make sure this guy doesn't beat us. And I don't know where that is right now. Like you said, they've got some guys, and it's like a, you know, how much does it matter to have two to three guys that you'd love to have as the number two wide receiver on your team and not having sort of a true number one guy?
Yeah. Like Landon Ransom and Rawson McNeil are the two young guys that have kind of been ticketed to like be a big piece of this offense. And Rawson missed a good chunk of spring. So we didn't get the opportunity to see him as much the last two scrimmage and spring game. Landon was there and played pretty well. But neither of those guys, and we have this debate every spring, right? There's that one guy this year, it was Quentin Jackson at running back, who just blows up and has that crazy game. And we have to sit here on this podcast and say, is Quentin Jackson going to be like a real threat to, you know, be a star next year? We have that spring game conversation because of something. Nobody in the receiver room outside of maybe Kobe Campbell, Matt Sykes, had the kind of spring where we have to have that conversation. That doesn't mean that we won't find a guy and Rawson McNeil or Landon Ransom or, you know, one of those guys steps up. Heck, Chase Jenkins has a big year.
Yeah.
But nobody has asserted themselves as that dynamo at the moment.
Yeah.
So what it's interesting, because if Tui and Bloom do something that we really haven't seen them do and open up the passing dispersal and funnel it to more than two or three guys, if they say, hey, we're going to cycle through five or six guys and EJ is good enough that he can make it work, if they do that, I think this room can function. I think it can work pretty well. But I just don't know. So for me, deep is more than you have. I feel like this roster is where it's supposed to be. Like, you have everybody in that room belongs on the football field. They're a good football player. But deep to me, if Luke McCaffrey was in the room this year or Bradley Rosner was in the room this year, then I'm like, yeah, you're deep because you also have that upper tier talent. And I'm not sure if it's there yet. It could be, but give me 4 weeks of the fall and then we'll kind of see how things are going.
Yep. That's kind of exactly where I am.
Silver lining, tight end. Here's my, are you a believer? Tight end. Bowden Groen will be the top receiving option on this team in 2024.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering about this one from the spreadsheet. Like, because at first I read that as like he will be the Bowden will be the top receiving tight end, and I was like, is that
that doesn't dispute? Sound too hot takey.
Not like
Elijah Maharo and Matt Hall, Ethan Powell. Like, I think there will be four or five tight ends that play this year and probably get a couple catches. So I'll put that on record. But yeah, Bowden Groen will have more receptions than the rest of the tight end room combined, I think.
He is, aside from Dean Connors, literally the leading returning receiver in terms of both catches and receiving yards from last year. He had 3 more yards than Landon Ransom, 4 more yards than Rawson McNeil, and 13 more catches than either of them last year. So
I looked that up and that shocked me. Like, I watched every Rice game last year and I knew he was involved, but that involved, I was just like, wow.
Yeah, that one, that surprised me. As does the, I am pleased by the almost perfect symmetry. I had not noticed this before, of Landon and Rawson's stats. Both 26 catches, 380 versus 379 yards, both 14.6 yards a carry, 3 touchdowns for Landon, 2 for Rawson.
Just, you know, pair it up.
Perfectly, perfectly
buddy buddies. The sophomore wide receiver duo. I guess Rawson's a redshirt sophomore. He's been here 3 years. I've given up counting. Tell me how many years you have left.
We're not back to a place. We're not quite back to a place where eligibility makes sense anymore. So.
No. But Bowden. Yeah, I think there's a comfort level that he has with EJ, which on one of the days where the defense was just eating the offense's lunch, they went down and they did a red zone period. And EJ had a progression where looked at the read on the outside, wasn't there, looked to the inside receiver, wasn't there, and then finds Bowden just on a crossing route across the field, second or third read, and hits him. And just Bowden accelerates, finds the pylon, and gets to the end zone through the entire defense, you know, 5-yard, you know, dump off, and just goes and takes it. And I was like, okay, this will play. And I think if you don't have anybody that claims that alpha spot, why not a tight end? It would not be crazy at Rice to have a tight end be your dude. They've had that happen a couple times and it's worked out all right.
Shout out to James Casey.
Yeah. And others.
Friend of the podcast.
Luke Wilson.
Vance McDonald. Those guys were pretty good.
Vance, yeah. There's a couple. Yeah. So we'll see. And we think, you forget all of the tight ends that Blumgren had at Stanford when he was offensive coordinator there. I'm just saying, like, this guy knows how to use a tight end. So, yeah. Right now, if you are giving me, it would be pretty hard for me to tell you outright that a tight end is going to have the most receiving yards on the team. Like, I wouldn't surprise me if Landon and Rawson both have more receiving yards than Bowden. But if you're talking total catches right now, it would not shock me, which I don't know if that's where I thought I was going to be coming out of spring ball, that I'd be jumping on a tight end bandwagon to lead the team in receptions, but it would not surprise me, which is pretty fun. Yeah. Because I don't know, could be special. And we kind of forget he got hurt in the USC game when he got here and was out a couple weeks. That would have been 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And kind of took him a while to get back into the offense. And then last year, splitting reps before, you know, Jack Bradley went down, he became like the sole guy. We haven't really seen an unleashed Bowden Groen, and I think we get that this year. And I think that could be very fun. So check me. Yes, I'm a believer in Bowden Groen, which rounds us out to offense. The last of the offensive line. So do we believe the offensive line is gonna be fine. Anybody I listening suppose that was at depends. Spring game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that depends on your definition of fine, but yeah, if fine means better than they were in the spring game, then I think health the at least the assumed probability of better health by the time the first game rolls around would lead us to say yes, hopefully they will be fine as compared to the spring game.
Yeah, for those who weren't there, weren't following, there were times, so the first team and second team centers were both out, so the third center was playing for the entirety of the game, and while cycling in with the fourth string center, who was not a center. So it's hard enough to deal with Isaiah Floyd and Blake Banish, but it's even harder when you're just not ready yet physically. You're coming along. You are not a giant fourth year guy like some of the dudes that Rice is putting in at O-line. But here's something that I thought was interesting. If we kind of look past that, and if I told you right now that offensive line next year, Spencer Castle, Lavelle DeMont, Weston Kropp, Miguel Cedeno, and Brad Bauer, those are all guys that have started games for you, or in Spencer's case, started games elsewhere, transferring down from the Ivies. If you told me that was the offensive line, I'd be okay with that. I don't know if I'd be star-studded, but I would think that would be fine. But here's the best part, all right? Plot twist. That's the second team.
Yeah, okay.
Right now, I don't know if any of those guys start. One of them or two of them could, but right now you have Ethan Onianwa, Brent Bakes, Braden Nutter, John Logg, and Georgia transfer Chad Lindberg, who just committed this week, as your potential starters on the O-line. So I think for the first time, Rice is too deep at the O-line, like legitimately too deep. And a couple Power 5 transfers starting. You got Ethan Onianwa at left tackle, who's been fantastic. Yeah, like I'm just looking through the roster, man, and seeing what I saw for most of spring practices. And if I look back to last year, you know, they kind of started into the season kind of putting it together. And
yeah,
week like 9 or 10, we started saying, oh, we can run the football again. This is fun. And we're always pretty good at pass protection. So I'm trying to divorce what I saw in those early moments of the spring game and think big picture. And I don't know what more I would ask from the O-line. So I believe, man, I really do.
Yeah, I've been hurt enough times by optimism in the offensive line under this coaching staff that I think it's always going to be I'll wait until I see it type thing. But the way last year ended, like you said, it really felt like they started to figure some things out. And having that legitimate depth, I'll put myself in the cautiously optimistic camp here that they have figured enough things out, and this group doesn't need to be world beaters. Like, you ain't got to necessarily be the most physically dominant on the offensive line as long as everybody knows their job and executes it on every play. And it felt like that was kind of the level they started to get to last year. And while this isn't the same cast, there's just a lot of experience across the board, and it feels like I don't know that you can be like really gung ho about this group, but I think there's enough in place that you can say like, okay, it'll things like I like it, the phrasing now is going like it's gonna be fine. Is it gonna be amazing? Probably not, but it's going to be fine. And sometimes fine is perfectly fine.
But here's the interesting thing. As I kind of think through this, what's more likely? The Rice O-line is fantastic,
one of the best that they've had in a while, one of the best in the conference, or the Rice wide receiver room is fantastic and has one of the best rooms in the conference. I think it's the O-line.
Yeah.
Because basically four of the five starters are back and you're swapping out Clay Servin for a blue chip guy from Georgia who has played a little bit with the Bulldogs, is not coming in completely green. Like, that's the worst case scenario. So, yeah, I'm revising this to fine to whatever gradient is above fine. Good.
Solid.
Solid. A little bit above, between solid and good. I feel pretty good. So, but point being, if we kind of run through those, we believe in EJ Warner. We believe in Dean Connors. We believe in Bowden Groen. And then we're solid on the O-line and we got questions about the wide receiver room. But if you have questions on the O-line to have a quarterback, a running back, and a tight end, that's kind of like the O-line's best friend when you have trouble, those guys. So, yeah, I think overall, probably more optimistic coming out of spring about the offense than I thought I was going to be. I didn't think I was going to be like afraid, but I guess I'm mentally processing not having Luke McCaffrey and not having JT Daniels. And I still feel pretty good.
Yeah, it's there's only so optimistic you can be, I guess, without those guys, but they did at least get a taste of being able to play winning football without one of those guys at the end of last year. And I feel pretty good. Like my level of optimism for the offense is not like this world right now, but the way they've kind of kept building this thing, I feel, I don't know, at peace with it. Not pessimistic, which I have very much felt like at times over the last several years. So
yeah, actually I think it's interesting. That's kind of like, that's the base state of where we expect this roster to be now that I think about it.
Right.
Like every year you expect them to field a competent roster with good players at every position. And some years you'll have a star here or there, a couple of them. Like
right.
At Rice, you're not going to have three Luke McCaffreys, a JT Daniels, and a Dean Connors every year. Like, it's not going to happen. Not that they're going to stay here. So if you're telling odd
people,
years,
people
the
love
stars
to do
aligned,
people love to do the they don't rebuild, they reload type of thing. Most places have to rebuild sometimes. And in terms of quarterback and wide receiver, this is probably a rebuilding year. Certainly in terms of wide receiver, it's probably a rebuilding year for on the offense. And that's okay sometimes, as long as you establish a baseline to where the rebuild means not amazing for a particular group rather than like, oh yeah, that's looking bad. And we're to the point where down year, having lost maybe the most talented wide receiver in school history, like it's not, it stings, but it's not a disaster.
Yeah. With upside. I think that the baseline is like, it was fine. Yeah. You know, nobody was difference maker. It worked. They caught the ball, but we'll see if somebody emerges. If somebody emerges, then that's where I think it gets interesting.
Right.
That's when this offense goes from like, okay, you're ho-hum, you're pretty good, to yeah, you got something. And, you know, we haven't talked a little bit. We don't need to dwell too much. Owen Carter, freshman coming in, I think can play legit every position, you know, wherever you want to line him up. And then Graham Walker coming in, Patrick Mahomes' half brother, I think he can be an X receiver and step in. So you're going to deepen that room, you know, which, you know, we talked about the depth piece, but there's a couple other guys. So we'll see. We're pretty good. Offense. Anything else on offense?
I don't think so.
We're going to give him a B. We feel pretty good. Somewhere between solid and fine. Too good. Defense. The entire conversation with the Rice defense this year has been interesting. And by this year, I mean this spring.
Yeah.
So we'll start with a guy that we talked about off the top, Josh Piercy, who kind of initiated this conversation. And I'm thinking now, if Josh Piercy isn't really playing on the defensive line. He still is ish. He's playing that hybrid position. But if he's not playing with his hand in the dirt most of the time, is the defensive line good enough, have enough pieces to be effective without Josh Piercy with his hand on the dirt? Do we believe?
It feels like this is one where you kind of have to take the, like, did they really need him at off-ball linebacker? And if the answer is no, and I kind of feel like it is, because I think you look at the rest of that group, and we'll talk about them in a bit, even without him, between Myron Morrison, who's now been there forever, and guys like DJ Arkansas, like, there's a lot of talent in that group. Like, we've been excited about that group and their potential going forward since, I don't know, some point last. Like, it's a group you feel pretty good about, even if he's not a part of it. So it feels like, why would this experiment have stuck the way it seems to have if they didn't feel really good about where the defensive line could be without him?
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think from a, I'm not in Josh Piercy's head, and I can probably have this conversation with him a little bit, but I got to think that part of it has to deal with his pro potential.
Yeah.
I think if I'm him and you watch these hybrid guys that end up going to the NFL, like they basically stick you somewhere, man. They say either you're on the ground or you're not. And the guys, a lot of the guys that have had the most success have been that hybrid guy, D end in college, and have shown, hey, I can stand up. Like right. Micah Parsons is like the prime example now of a guy you can put all over the field. I think that's what Josh Piercy wants to show to NFL scouts. He's like, I can do this. I can be wherever you need to be. I'm big enough. I'm strong enough to do that. So from a Josh Piercy standpoint, I think it makes all the sense in the world to show that you can be that guy and you can put that on tape. For the D-line itself, it's kind of a, maybe I'm going to talk out of two sides of my mouth here, because we just talked about the wide receivers and how, like, man, I don't know. They have some guys, but they don't have a star, right? And I'm looking at the defensive, especially the pass rush, and you have Coleman Coco, and Coleman Coco, I think, is going to be a star, is already a star. He's great. You look at the rest of the room, I don't know yet if there's somebody else in there that becomes a star of that caliber, but I also don't know if I care as a kind of process, because I watched what they did to an offensive line that I just said I really believe in. Even, you know, sans a center in the spring game, I'm just talking big picture in the spring. I watched the D-line win and dominate, and I'm talking guys like second and third team D-line making plays. And to the point where I'm standing there on the sideline with, you know, my piece of paper up with my roster and be like, okay, who is number 50, 60, 70, like looking up these guys because I haven't seen them before and they're making plays. So I think you're right. I think the staff wouldn't have signed off on it. They said, sorry, Josh, like we want you to be a great pro product, but we get paid based on winning games in college and we need you there. Like, I don't think they would have signed off if they didn't feel good enough about the D-line room. And yeah, big picture, I've just seen a spring where the D-line had a great spring. So I don't know if it's Charlie Lewis or Damone Green or Jimmy Wachiku or El Royal Morris. Like, just I'm just thinking, you know, Joseph Mutombo, who has moved on the inside of, he's the first guy off the bus kind of guy who,
yeah,
he played a little bit sparingly last year. He's a behemoth, a giant man. It's great. So they just got so many different guys. And I think on the D-line, if you still have Josh Piercy, who might not have his hand in the dirt, but you know he's going to be getting in the face of those quarterbacks. If you have Josh Piercy and Coleman Coco on the field, especially I think top level with Blake Banish and Isaiah Floyd, I feel like I think back to the lines that they've had, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe that we thought were really good lines, but the talent and the athleticism and the speed of who you're being able to put on there, especially on the edge, I feel really good about the D-line, better than I thought I was going to, quite honestly.
Yeah. And I think, like, to your point about comparing this group to the wide receivers, and that, like, yeah, it may be a case where in either group there's maybe not a true star. I think maybe Coleman Coco is closer to that than any guy they have in the wide receiver room. But, like, even if you see it as just, like, okay, here are two position groups that are full of pretty good guys that don't have a sort of one standout player, that matters more at defensive line than it does at almost any other position in football. Because you just, like, to function the best along the defensive line, you need to be able to rotate guys. You cannot throw the same 3 to 4 guys out the entire game, because those are big dudes who are working really hard on every play, and I don't care how conditioned they are. If you can't rotate those guys during the game, they're going to be gassed at the end. And the more you can rotate them, and the more you can swap out groups of guys, and to the extent that it's possible with the offense, moving different guys in different sort of personnel situations, and trust that there's not going to be a drop off, then that gives you such an advantage at the end of games to not have your D-line be entirely gassed, basically, and to be able to go to the guys that are the freshest and have them still be ready to go at the end of games. So even if you just view this as a room full of guys who are all solid, like, that matters with this position in a way that it doesn't for some others.
Yeah. And if you just, I think back, I know everyone has, like, blanked out the Texas State game from ever happening. Like, I know it's just, we've wiped it from our minds. Right. But if you're willing to, you know, push through the pain of some of that experience and you go back to that game, the way that the D-line and the front seven played in that game was inspired. It was incredible. And you're telling me you lost to Braylon Carroll, who is a big piece of that. But you bring everybody else back, you add a couple pieces, and that was a really, really good Texas State offense that you were able to keep in check. Like, that game got sideways when pick sixes were thrown and balls were put on the deck on special teams, not because the defense did not play outstanding. So, yeah. I think the D-line, I think they got some dudes. I think they're going to be pretty good. And I think Josh Piercy can line up wherever he wants, and we're going to be just fine. So we give you a rubber stamp, Josh. Go play whatever you want to play. Hit somebody. Let's see. I guess Josh is our in-between, right?
Yeah.
To bring us back to linebacker.
The natural connection, if you will.
There we go. Linebacker, here is our believe it or not, that the linebacker room is the best room on defense. Do we believe it?
I'm leaning that way.
Did you think you were going to be there in February? Because I don't think I would have told you that.
No. But, like, Myron and DJ and Ty Morris, and now if you're including Josh in this, like, putting Josh in this room immediately gives it, like, I like the rest of the guys that were in line for snaps already, and throwing Josh in there is like, okay, well, that feels like overkill, but yeah.
And for clarifying, like, Josh is still technically meeting with the defensive lineman, and
yeah.
So, and he'll probably be listed as edge or rush end on the roster, but he's both right now. We can double count him wherever we want.
But yeah, this is a room I feel extremely good about.
Yeah, I think for me, the thing that does it for me is I feel like we just got so used to, they play two guys, they have one stud, and they have another guy who's really good. And it doesn't matter who else is in the room. You know, like, we had Blaze Aldridge and Antonio Montero. And like, okay, we're good. Like, we got Myron Morrison. Okay, fine. You know, we're good. But the fact that they can add all these pieces. And I think what's most, I had this epiphany moment, okay, where they roll out every combination of guys in the spring. Like, especially like during just regular Tuesday, Wednesday practice, you're sitting there and you're like, okay, this is, you know, Cooper King and Ty Morris lined up at linebacker. You know, it's Bo Barton and Myron Morrison just going through guys on the, like, this is not going to happen on Saturdays in the fall at all. But there was one particular series I looked up, and it was Ty Morris and DJ Arkansas as your Will and Mike linebackers, and then on the edge, Josh Piercy. And just the pure speed in that room, because I think Ty Morris might have the quickest first step to the quarterback I've seen of any player at Rice under Blomgren. I think the Braylon Carroll is probably your other argument. Just the guy who can just go. Just like, wow. But you put him, DJ Arkansas, and Josh Piercy all on the field at the same time, there's just so much speed. Like, and in the spring game, for those who were there, Braylon Walker caught a, like, that screen pass and took it 50 yards. He was chased downfield and tackled 50 yards down the field by Bo Barton, who's going to be a special teamer in the linebacker room. I'm just saying, if your special team's fifth or sixth string linebacker can chase down Braylon Walker, I'm just saying, man. I think that room is going to be pretty good. So, and Chris Conte wasn't available all spring. He'll be back too. Like, he started most of the season last year, at least half of it. I'm trying to remember when he went down.
I straight up forgot Chris was still on the team. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, well, he's been out, and he'll be back for the fall. So, like, there are so many guys. And I've been talking with John Kay and the linebackers coach, and just like jiving him. I'm like, have you successfully petitioned, you know, DC Brian Smith to get more than two linebackers on the field? Do you think that's going to happen? He said, we're trying, man. So I don't know. Like, all of a sudden that room has become the best room on defense. And I am, of all the statements, I think I believe more about that than maybe any of the other ones that we've gone through.
Yeah. Since Alabama's had the new coaching staff, they've had like seven or eight commitments from high school prospects, and like five of those have been linebacker. Like, literally half of their 2025 class is linebackers right now. And people are like, oh, Kane Womack, the defensive coordinator, he wants to run the 0-11-0 defense. And you know, there's something to be said for just a whole bunch of linebacker type guys. You never know where anybody's coming from if you throw all those guys out there. So you know what? John Kay,
the amoeba defense.
Yes, exactly. I want a minimum of seven, like the way Stanford, like Bloom knows how to do this. It's just the defense version of when he used to put like eight fullbacks and tight ends on the field at once. I want a minimum of seven linebackers at all times.
This was really like pioneered. I'm thinking this is like Bill Belichick and the Patriots in like 2000, like 16, 17, yeah, 18, that era where they just put one guy on the line with his hands down and just throw everybody else out. And I'm just saying, you could do that. You could put four linebackers on the field, and then Isaiah Foyd and Blake Banish, Coleman Coco, like, and just say, okay, figure it out. That would be fun.
Yeah, one of the fleeter of foot linebackers like Ty or DJ, like those guys can play safety, right?
Sure.
They got to have one guy who played nickel in high school or something like that. So just
Ty Morris was a hybrid safety linebacker in high school. Yeah, that I do. So, yeah,
the only players on the defense that cannot be capably replaced with linebackers are corners and defensive tackles. So just,
I don't know. I saw Bo Barton. Did you know? And I put this, this has gotten out. Bo Barton clocked as the fastest player on the field in multiple practices this spring.
Wow.
Plays linebacker, folks. That's not how it's supposed to happen.
Well, there we go. Okay. So I said a minimum of seven linebackers, and I was thinking two defensive tackles and two corners, but like, you know, Bo can play corner, it sounds like. So that gets us up to eight. We just have to figure out how to get three more linebackers on the field.
There we go. John Kay, if you're listening to this, you're welcome. Here's my propaganda. I guess Well, that's the interesting point, because if we're taking a corner off the field, who do we leave on the corner position? Are you a believer? Here's something that we didn't really think about. I think that the company line for Mike Bloomgren and the Rice defense has been they're returning 20 out of 22 from their two deep on defense. And you're like, that's great. And you're like, yeah, we lost to Braylon Carroll. And you're like, cool, we got Blake Banish. We got so many guys. It's great. And I'm like, cool, okay. We lost Trayshon Devones. You're like, okay, we have – who's going to play corner? That was it. I just did not mentally process through what was going after that. I was just like, 20 of 22, yeah. And then I got to the spring, and basically from day one, Max Ahoyo was your starting corner opposite Sean Fresh. So are you a believer? Max Ahoyo is your opening day starter at corner.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, again, if you had asked me this 2 months ago, I would have been like, Lamont Narcisse, I guess. They move him outside and find somebody else to play inside. But, I mean, unless there is a player, like a freshman coming in over the summer that they expect to just blow the world away, like, I don't know how you expect a guy to you know, have been on the team last year and then take the job in spring and carry it through the entirety of spring and lock down that job. Like, if he was that on top of it right away and kept that all the way through, like, I don't know how you don't kind of put your money on that guy.
I feel like, you know, fool me once or fool me twice, shame on me, or whichever variation of those things go. I feel like as we watch, like, I look at the corner room, right? And I look at, honestly, the defensive backs that Rice has had under this coaching staff. And, you know, like, Sean Fresh, when he came onto the field, we're like, who is this small man? Is he going to play corner at the Division I level? And right. Then you go watch what he do, watch him play, and you're like, okay, yeah, he's really freaking good. And he proved us wrong. That was great. They rolled out Jordan Dunbar, this guy from, you know, what, New York, New Jersey, that they just, I think, a two-star guy they pulled out in recruiting, and he becomes a bona fide shutdown corner. Okay. They get Trayshon Devones, who walked on, and he becomes a lights-out corner. So if the coaching staff is telling me that Max Ahoyo is going to be a great corner, I think at this point, yeah, I kind of just have to believe them.
Like, Brian Smith, who seems to be able to, like, rummage in the couch cushions and find, like, solid starting cornerbacks.
Which is really hard to do. It's supposed to be really hard to do.
Yeah, then if the endorsement has come through this early in spring, then that's the sort of thing where I say thumbs up, A+, no notes. Sounds good.
Yeah, I think my only caveat here, and I put this in kind of some of the things I'm still mulling after spring. That piece is going to come out probably next week, whenever we get this out. But one of my questions is, even if you believe in Max Ahoyo 1,000%, and you're like, he's going to be the next guy, the next corner, the next shutdown guy, great. I still want more. Like, that's a room we've seen so many guys get banged up and injured.
Yeah.
That look out for the portal over the next couple weeks. I'm pretty confident Rice is going to go add somebody. Are there going to be starting corners growing on trees that are just going to be available for Rice to get? I don't know. Probably not. Like, that's just going to be hard enough to find at any point in the transfer cycle. It's going to be really, really hard to find in April and May. So I don't know if they get anybody that they say, yeah, you're supplanting Max Ahoyo, go in there. But I think they're going to bring in more competition in the room. And if Max can beat out everybody on the roster and whoever they bring in now in fall camp, then yeah, I'm in Brian Smith, I trust. That is my official statement on the corner room. If it ain't broke.
So, no, yeah. I'm not about to start questioning now.
Oh, yeah. Another guy, JoJo Jean. Like, he came out of nowhere and became a corner and was the corner all of last spring, was the third corner, and ended up being a guy who started at safety for half the season last year. So yeah, they just keep finding guys. It's incredible. The corner whisper across multiple defensive back coaches. It's crazy. Okay. Defensive back, safeties, last room here. Are we a believer? Are we believers? Are you a believer? This room has enough playmakers to be differential. And kind of what I mean when I was kind of put that together is like, not only are these guys good, but we can say that this group is a difference-making room on the defense.
Yeah, I think so. You still have Gabe Taylor back there, and you have, it's the sort of position where I have to like, go back and remind myself, like who was actually playing and when and where last year, because I look at it and see like, oh, that guy's back, like he's played plenty. Oh, Play Wyatt, okay, yeah, he's still here. Oh, Chike, he's still here. Oh, JoJo Jean, he's still here. Like. All of these guys, it's like
they're all still here. Just after all of them.
How did we play this many safeties? Like, obviously, some of them were getting hurt, but it's the sort of thing where I look at it and I'm like, where did all these safeties come from? All of these guys have played. Where did I, like, how can I hold all these safeties?
Apparently, you can just keep adding them and you don't have to send them away. It's this new thing that they're trying called the COVID year, I think. But yeah, man, that's been the funnest thing looking through here. And I think Rice has had, pretty solid safety play for the last several years. And they've always had like a couple guys like the George Nyakwal who are like, yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
But I think it's the interesting thing is I think there's some of those guys, and this is just kind of the evolution of this roster. I think just the athleticism that the guys on the roster have right now, and I mentioned this kind of with the general speed, it's just like, yeah, they're good football players. And I think those guys were good football players, but I think Rice has good football players who now are, like 4.4 fast, 4.3 fast, some of them, and like uber athletic and like hard-hitting guys that have mass and weight on them. You know, like Play Wyatt is a bulldozer, honestly, at the Viper position and everybody else. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I think Gabe has had moments. I don't think he's had the season that he thinks he was going to have at this point. Like, yeah. I think he envisioned coming into college and doing the high school thing all over again, where he has like 11 interceptions and returns half of them for touchdowns. And like, I still think that's in the range of outcomes. Like, we could have a Gabe Taylor year where he has 7 picks. Wouldn't shock me. So
we do have to keep reminding ourselves that he played high school football for like 1 year.
Literally one season, and had, I think I got to go look it up, 6 or 7 pick sixes. His only season, senior year of high school football. Like, that's hard. It's hard enough to score 7 touchdowns on offense when they're throwing you the ball on purpose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Gabe Taylor, I think, is there. And then I think someone that is not, if I'm going through this list of, we talk through everybody, who's not really a household name that I think becomes a household name, I think it's Tyson Flowers. I think that's a guy that, he's, we ask this question every year when we talk with the guys that are on the beat of the teams that Rice is going to play. We ask them for who's a guy that nobody else has heard of, that everybody's going to know by the end of the year, who's going to be on that all-conference team by the end of the year. I think if this secondary is as good as we think they could be if they stay healthy, I think it's Tyson Flowers.
The shout out to Jared Kalmus, the third string tight end for UTSA Memorial Award.
Oh man, may he live in honor. Oscar Cardenas, there you go. I think about the name.
There we go.
We're getting there. Yeah, I talked with Jared this week. He told me that people are still texting him that, hey, I saw Frank Harris in San Antonio today and he wasn't wearing a boot. Like, maybe just unaware that Frank Harris is out of eligibility. Allegedly.
I will not believe that Frank Harris is actually out of eligibility until UTSA takes the field and he is not dressed out.
And even then, like, you're going to like blink at halftime twice and be like, he's not there, right? Right?
Yeah. No, I fully believe that they're going to find some like ancient law that's like, oh, yes, it's written in the stone tablets that Frank Harris gets a 19th year.
Where were you when Frank Harris came out of the stands in his walker and threw a 60-yard touchdown pass? The legend. Frank's great. Big fan of all non-Rice players that I've had the chance to watch. But, you know, Frank's not playing this year, allegedly. But if he was, I would like to see Tyson Flowers get him in a phone booth and see what happens. I think Tyson's going to be a stud. And then a couple other guys in that room that I'm, you know, we'll see. I'm just kind of going through my mental Rolodex. I think Peyton Stevenson and Davion Hook have two guys that, you know, I might see that they could have some rotational minutes that and play some good roles. I think, actually, I'm going to be honest. I don't know if the depth is there. I'm just kind of looking at the roster now, and I'm like Josh Williams and Marcus Williams, actually. I think both of those guys. Never mind. Okay, I'm coming around. So I'm going to go difference-making, yes. I think the depth I'm getting to being pretty good with. I think with most players and most things at this position, once you get to the second and third team, you're like, man, I don't think they have any stars anymore. Yes, because this is in Alabama, and their third teamers aren't five stars.
Right.
So that's fine. But big picture, yeah. I think the linebacker room is the deepest. I think it has the highest end talent. But if you're telling me who's more likely, who is going to be first, who's going to have a first team all conference member? Is it going to be the D line or is it going to be the secondary? We count Josh Piercy as a D line for this conversation. Josh Piercy, Coleman Coco,
yeah,
up against Tyson Flowers, Sean Fresh, Gabe Taylor. I think it's going to be the secondary.
Yeah.
Just because to do it on the D line, you got to have like 12 sacks.
Right. Honestly, that's one where I'd have to be like looking at the competition, like how many, oh yeah, this guy's going to have 10 sacks guys. Are there in the AAC this year?
There's always more than you think.
Right. Exactly. That's
UTSA will pull one out of some small town in West Texas that nobody's ever heard of. And he'll have 10 sacks.
They're going to find a dude on a bench on the Riverwalk and just be like, yep, he's an NFL
run
draft
that
prospect
way.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, man. The guy who played for the Saints, Marcus Davenport. That's not how he came about, but it kind of felt like that. That was like before UTSA was a thing. They're like, yeah, we have a guy who should be in the first round. You're like, who, what, huh? It worked out, I think. Like, he hung around for a while. But yeah, interesting proposition to have. We will see. I wouldn't mind if they get multiple first teamers on defense. I think if this defense is the defense that we think they're going to be, I think that should be the expectation, which is a tall ask, man. That's a tall ask. So big picture, I know we're supposed to be, as we wrap this up, we're supposed to feel happy about spring ball, but also we're supposed to be studious enough to not be like, you know, doing cartwheels. We're supposed to be smiling, but with a seatbelt. Like, yeah, it was great, but like, hold off, guys. How do we feel big picture?
I think I'm appropriately optimistic for the offense. I think I'm driving right around the speed limit. I'm using my turn signals. I'm checking my mirrors. Like, you know, I'm not cowering at everybody that drives by, but I'm, you know, I'm staying in my lane, and I feel good about the pace I'm making. Defense, I'm running that engine a little hot, I would say, probably.
I think that's fair. I think if I'm making think about Masters just finished up, right? If I'm making a golf comparison, then I think everybody made par.
Yeah.
Right now. And I think that's kind of where I expected. And if you look through, and I'm not going to pretend I'm not a golf guy, like, sorry. Maybe some people are, but just looking at this list, we had 8 guys finish above or better than par at the Masters this year. So par is pretty good, man. Like, if you're talking how big the field is, par is pretty good. I feel like Rice is on par for where they're supposed to be right now. And I think if you go give me a playoff, or you go give me one round to 18, can they beat that? Yeah. I think they've the range of outcomes is they made the first couple cuts, right? That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at in golf terms. Like, the car is running hot. They've made the first couple of cuts. I think they're exactly where they're supposed to be. When we envisioned and when we sat back, and if they would have told both of us, you know, Truth Serum, hey, Mike Bloomgren goes into year seven. Like, what does this team look like? And you're like, well, I think they have talent across the board. I think they figured out the quarterback position. I think they have all the pieces to be competitive and contend in the American. That's what it's supposed to look like in year seven. I think they're there. Like, that's what this roster looks like to me. So par. Yeah.
Like,
and I'm happy with that.
They were, you know, we had said it plenty of times, but they moved up to a more difficult conference last year, and despite that, managed to have their best season under this coaching staff. And right now, it feels like they're at the place you should be, but like you were saying, like, which is I feel like you might take a step back at some positions relative to last year, but even though you had this incredibly talented quarterback, this going to get drafted wide receiver, you lose those guys, but you're not, there can still be like an expectation of overall improvement. Even with losing those guys, the team and the program are in a healthy enough place that, okay, you take a step back in a couple areas, that doesn't mean that there aren't still expectations and that we don't still want to see even better outcomes than we saw last year. And that's really feels like a really healthy place for this program to be.
I feel good, man. The longer I talk, the higher I'm going to get. And then I got to come down. I know it's spring ball.
Yeah.
It's spring ball.
Yeah.
Like, we do can't overreact to spring ball. But, hey, you know, Bo Barton and Quentin Jackson, have a day.
All right. Well, I think that will wrap it up for us. Hopefully y'all got those of you that were jonesing for some classic Roost Pod run through the roster action. You got plenty of your fair share of that. So we'll wrap it up here, but we'll be back at some point in the next several weeks as the long summer stretches on. Well, I guess it won't be long before we're previewing 2024 opponents. So be on the lookout. We'll be back before you know it, probably. But thanks for sticking with us, and Rice fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.